So in the world of stock market trading, early days, everybody would just, you just had to be a better trader than somebody else. Then what came along, trading algorithms that would go in and they would go and trade for you. And initially all the companies that had that first, they'd have a massive advantage, but soon everybody had these trading algorithms. So then it's a stalemate, right? It's all the robots trading against each other. So nobody really has that alpha return. It's all just a baseline. So what is one of the highest paid professions in the world of trading? It's actually these quants that know how to train their algorithm to make it better than everyone else's. So it's not everybody has access to a very similar algorithm, but it's the training data you put in and the human element. And that's exactly what we're looking to do with ads. So how can you be that quant for your ads that can actually train the AI and who you're looking to reach? Because it's going to be easier for anybody to set up ads and target people using Google's AI and get a baseline level of results. What is going to be more challenging is making sure you have the right creative that really works very well, and then also that you're training the AI to get better results than the average.
Welcome to the Seven Hats Podcast. My name is Yuval Selig, and I've been on the entrepreneurial roller coaster for over 20 years. I've experienced it all throughout my journey, the grind, burnout, failure, and ultimately, success. The turning point for me was realizing that building a successful company is meaningless if you neglect the other significant areas of your life. So today, I'm inviting you to join me on an adventure through those seven areas, what I call the seven hats. Every week, my guests and I will drop valuable insights and pearls of wisdom, helping, motivating, and inspiring you to get your seven hats in order and deliver real impact with meaning. So let's get going. Welcome, Seven Hatters. Today, we embark on an enthralling journey through the digital landscape with Alaric Heck, a visionary entrepreneur and YouTube marketing maestro. As we explore hats 3 and 4, the servant and the entrepreneur, and uncover the layers of Alaric's remarkable journey from a creative child to a digital advertising pioneer. Alaric's early life was a canvas of creativity, supported by his family's encouragement to explore and innovate. This nurturing environment was the bedrock of his entrepreneurial spirit, guiding him to launch his first venture, a YouTube channel, at the tender age of 12. Despite facing the inherent challenges of digital entrepreneurship, Alaric's unwavering determination and sharp insights into the evolving digital world propelled him forward. Alaric's path wasn't without its hurdles, though. From navigating the complexities of the digital marketing space to mastering the intricacies of YouTube advertising, each challenge was a stepping stone to a greater understanding and success. His journey is a powerful narrative of innovation, adaptation, and relentless pursuit of excellence. Now, as the founder of Ad Outreach, Alaric has revolutionized how businesses leverage YouTube for marketing, transforming the digital advertising space. Beyond his business achievements, Alaric is dedicated to empowering others, sharing his knowledge, and mentoring aspiring entrepreneurs to harness the power of digital media. So, if you've seen Alaric everywhere, as I did for the past few years, and you're interested by the potential of YouTube marketing, eager to learn from a digital pioneer, or inspired by stories of resilience and innovation, then let's warmly welcome Alaric to the Seven Hats. Alaric, welcome to the Seven Hats.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited.
Listen, little did you know that I've been following you for years. I don't think I could have avoided you, because you're everywhere. It's funny, you even had a video that stated that fact. I think you said in the video, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, in your opening remarks, you said, "Surprise, you see me here? I can show you how to do that as well." I think that was brilliant marketing.
Thank you.
You're undoubtedly renowned in the industry as a YouTube virtuoso, right? Frequently hailed as the ad guru of our times. And you've changed the game, I think, for countless of businesses with a knack for deciphering the digital realm and an unmatched expertise in YouTube marketing. But before we jump into the intricacies of your entrepreneurial journey and YouTube adventures, I think the Seven Hatters would be thrilled to hear about your own journey and where it all started. So, Alaric, where were you born and how was your childhood like?
Yeah, so I was born in Chelmsford, Massachusetts, and my childhood was really one full of creativity and, you know, having my parents really encourage me to be creative. Really, I am really blessed and grateful to have had a really great upbringing with my parents, where they really encouraged the creativity that I was able to have. And they, at the time, I thought I didn't really like some of the strict rules against video games, watching too much, not being able to really watch too much TV or play video games. There weren't any video games allowed at all. Be creative. And how can you use that creativity to do different things? And I think that growing up, I had a really good kind of balance between the encouragement for that and also the encouragement to become the best version of myself. I think that really illustrates some of those early days as I started to dive into things. And I remember like the classic entrepreneur story of the lemonade stand and selling that on the street when I was 7, 8, 9. And I remember my parents actually teaching me the importance of profit and how profit is different than revenue. I remember I had collected the money coming in and they're like, all right, this is what's going to the supplies, to the lemons, to the all this stuff.
Nice.
And I remember just being confused. Why are we taking that away? This is the money that was got. That paid for the supplies. And so I learned at a younger age also the difference with profit. And so I'm definitely really grateful to my parents for that. And even though they're not entrepreneurs themselves, my mom raised my brother and I and then became a preschool teacher. And my father is a software engineer. And so essentially, that said, we were still really encouraged, my brother and I, to be creative from a young age. And my brother took really the academic route and I took, so right now he's a Stanford PhD doing all that stuff.
Wow.
And I took the business route and I've always just been building different businesses. And I'm sure we'll talk about in a second, the first business I built, which was my YouTube channel, and then building from there.
Did they take taxes for living at home from your lemonade stand? That's the question.
So they did not go that far. They did not go that far to taxes for living at home or something like that. But all the supplies. And the other thing too, that I also think was really good too, is even with my YouTube channel, with these different things, when I was creating videos, and I remember really wanting a video camera, and that was that Christmas and like birthday presents. It was like, all right, here's all the stuff. I feel like I actually had a pretty good upbringing that was in this middle class upbringing, like in suburb kind of middle class. So we didn't have everything handed to us. We weren't on the upper, you know, side, but we also were luckily not scrounging. Like we had enough, but I knew that I wanted to strive for more. And I definitely was excited about building that. I remember, and again, it's later on, and we'll talk about it. I think one thing that really resonates about you and the podcast people listening is the combination of the balance, but also impact, right? And the fulfillment of impact. And that's something I learned later on. And I'm going to talk about that. But from a young age, I was always, okay, I'm going to make the millions. I'm going to do. And so I remember just thinking about, okay, I wanted to build a business from a young age.
So your dad being a software engineer, did that entail that you had a bunch of technology at home and computers and everything that would allow you to explore YouTube?
Yes, exactly. And that's why we had the family computer. And then of course, later on, I had my own computer, but we had that computer there. And I remember I would film these videos with friends. So originally it was the old family camera. And then later on I would get as a gift, a better kind of Sony camera. But essentially I would be filming these videos with friends, with my brother, and I wanted to learn how to edit them. And I remember I was either 9 or 10 at the time, and my dad had a friend that worked at Adobe, and they were able to get like an employee discount, and they got that as a, because at that time, the Creative Suite was like thousands of dollars, yeah, or whatever. That wouldn't have been, they wouldn't have been able to, you know, do that as like a main gift, but because he had that friend that worked there, and they were able to do that employee discount for that, and they got that for me as a Christmas present. I remember I was just over the moon excited. I had the 8 discs or whatever, loading up Creative Suite 2 or whatever it was, loading it all up onto that, the old computer, and learning how to edit in Adobe Premiere and going on to these different boards online. I remember there was one site, one forum, and a tutorial site, videocopilot.net, this guy, Andrew Kramer, that was creating all these like how to edit in Adobe Premiere. He was this guy over in Hollywood or whatever that was editing things, and how to edit and how to use After Effects. And so I just went online and taught myself how to do that. And then that kind of gave way to some of the YouTube things that I did in the future. But yeah, that was what it was like at that point.
So were you on YouTube before Google purchased it? Were you like a real early adapter, or like when did you start?
Very early adopter. So the YouTube, so I started seriously doing YouTube. Not seriously. I started that YouTube channel in 2009, but I was on YouTube before that. And my first YouTube channel, I think I opened in 2008, but I was also on YouTube. I think it was in 2007 at some point I got on YouTube, which is the very early days, but I wasn't making content until 2008. I was just making content with friends. And then 2009 is when I built AppFind, which is the app review YouTube channel that went on to have 500,000 subscribers and was the launching point of my main business. But I remember even before YouTube, so I would go on that video copilot and also, and I was pretty young at the time, just to clarify, but I would go on video copilot, but I would also go on, there was another site, I'm trying to remember. It was like Newgrounds, and you could host videos on Newgrounds, but if people didn't like them, they'd get deleted. I don't know if you remember that, but I posted some videos that I had made and I was like a kid at the time. So I was posting these videos and they would just get too many downvotes. And then they would just say, sorry, the video's been removed from the platform. So I thought YouTube was so cool because you could just post videos and people can't just remove, they're not just going to remove them. They're going to keep them there.
But what did you want to do? You started in high school, right? Basically, or prior, before high school?
Yeah, prior to that, I started my main YouTube channel when I was 12, YouTube app finds. That was back in 2009. I'm 26 now. It started, at an early age, but about 14 years ago. But yeah, started with that channel, AppFind. So that was like in middle school, but I was doing it more seriously in high school and in college. And so in high school is when I actually started making money with it. So I got accepted in the YouTube Partner Program. And I remember it was like my sophomore year of high school. I was making about $60,000 a year from the YouTube channel. And I think it had crossed just about 100,000 subscribers at that point. I got the 100,000 like subscriber plaque, and I was making ad revenue, and I had a few sponsorships. I'd get more sponsorships later on. But I remember I was talking about that just with a friend, and I wasn't even trying to brag. I was like, oh, this is what I'm doing. I'm doing this YouTube channel. And I remember one of the teachers in one of those classes that I was in high school came over. And they're like, no way you're doing that. Like, you're lying or whatever. And I'm like, oh, no, I am. So I just pulled it up.
So did you go to college? What happened?
Yeah.
What did you want to do at that time? Were you like, YouTube is going to be my career, I'm going to be an entrepreneur, or did you have other ambitions?
So I knew I wanted to do entrepreneurial things. I also didn't know, because I knew I liked being creative. And that's also why ultimately marketing and video marketing is what I like. So you could probably see how it's all converging, because I have two sides of me. I have the side that loves like business and entrepreneurship, but I also the side that just love video. And so I actually thought that I was going to be like a director, executive producer. Also as a kid, you're enamored by Hollywood, you know, and all this stuff. And so I thought that I was going to go more into the way I was going to combine my two loves of video and business was going to be in the kind of movie TV world of like, all right. And also leadership. I've always just been a natural kind of like leader. And growing up, I did Boy Scouts and stuff like that too, Eagle Scout, all that stuff. So the kind of leading. And so combining these three things, being good at leading people and liking to lead people, also video and business. And I thought at the time I'd be like a director or producer of like movies. But then later on, I realized that actually marketing and video marketing and YouTube marketing, it was like right there in front of me. That actually was my calling. And I remember when it actually flipped for me, there was, and I'm sure like people listening, like yourself, probably these moments where you hear one thing and it clicks and it completely flips for you. So it was when I was actually touring college, not too long after that YouTube channel, I was talking about that. I was touring, I think this was actually, I didn't end up going there. I went to UMass Amherst, but I was touring, I think, Syracuse, and they had a business track and they had a film track. And I was touring both of them. And I liked the business track. I also liked the film track, but I was looking at, okay, how, and they were talking about how you could do a dual major. And I remember talking to somebody in the film side, and it was a film student for several years, and she was posting her videos on Vimeo. And she was showing some videos that she had made. And I said, if you post the videos on YouTube and you add a title, tag, thumbnail, you could have more people watch the video, because I noticed there's a dozen views, two dozen views on the video. And she turned to me and she said, and I remember distinctly, I don't care if someone, if people watch the video, I just want to make the best video. That's when it hit me. I am not like that at all. I do care if people watch the video. I want people to watch. And I actually care less about it being the best video and more about people watching it and it affecting people and impacting people and like enjoying it or getting value from it or whatever it happens to be. And that's when I realized, wait a second, it's marketing that I really love. It's not the video. The video is a medium that I can use for what I'm actually excited and passionate about, which is the marketing side. And then that's when it really clicked for me. I ended up going to UMass Amherst, Eisenberg School of Management, like the top like state school in Massachusetts. I went over there. And the reason I went there is they were like one of the only universities. I got into some other more other kind of prestigious universities, but they said, oh, your YouTube channel is great, but you're just going to focus on studies when you come here. Versus at UMass, my alma mater, when I went over there, they wanted to encourage me to continue to grow my business. And I remember meeting with the entrepreneurial kind of professor that became like an advisor for me throughout my years there. And I remember him telling me, let's grow this business as much as possible. So this is what you're doing post-college. And the thing is, I know us, like we're talking about, I actually went into my freshman year of college, I was already making like over six figures on my YouTube channel. But I think the thing is I just had, especially with my parents, they really encouraged me to do things. But also I think that they were concerned that it wasn't like big enough at that point, that this is a very clear thing. They were really, not just the college, but also saying, hey, what job are you going to do after college, even if you're still doing the YouTube side? And I remember myself being like, all right, I'm building this business. So I almost saw college and going to college as like this transitionary period, which I think a lot of entrepreneurs that maybe are younger entrepreneurs can use it this way, which is the kind of the college dorm room business. Like what's going to actually like, how can I use college as almost like an incubator for building the business big enough such that it's at that point where I know it's going to be sustainable longer term. And that's essentially what I did. I took the YouTube channel, which by that time, you know, had grown to several hundred thousand subscribers, was making over $100,000 a year. That channel, I systematized. I hired scriptwriter, video editor, business development person, all just kind of other college students. And I created an assembly line for the videos, pulled myself out of the business so that I could focus on what was next. Because with YouTube, I saw there was more linear growth. Also, by that time, it was starting to die down a little bit in terms of popularity around mobile apps. iPhones had now gone to 10 iterations, so it was less exciting than earlier on. And so I was like, okay, what's next? And that's when I had this mobile app that had sponsored me for a video. And I had, you know, dozens and dozens, over 100 of these, but I had a mobile app. They sponsored me for a video. I did a video. They got a bunch of downloads. This is great. Can you post the video again another time? And I said, hey, like it doesn't work like that. You can't just post the same video twice and double the results. But what if we take this video and we run it as an ad on YouTube? And this was about 8 years ago now. So back in like 2015. So it was still the earlier days of YouTube ads. And so they were a little skeptical. But I take the video. I run it as an ad. And we spend $500 on it, and they get thousands and thousands of users, 11,000 users. So they're blown away. So they have another app that they had under their umbrella. And so then we promote that, and that does even better. And we keep running some of these promotions because they're ads, right? So we keep them running. And I remember them calling me up. They're like, Alric, we want you to drop out of college, fly out here to Silicon Valley, join our team. You can keep your YouTube channel. We'll give you a six-figure salary. We'll give you stock options. The whole thing. And it was tempting for a minute, but I think a lot of people listening to this call as entrepreneurs, like we want to build it ourselves. Even if it starts as a smaller castle, I want to be the king of my own castle, building it up as opposed to the knight in somebody else's. And so essentially I turned it down. It was tough because this was also between my freshman and sophomore year of college. But that's when I realized I have something here. And I ended up creating Ad Outreach that summer, what became Ad Outreach at first. It was YouTube ads for mobile apps. And then we evolved into, of course, YouTube ads for different businesses.
So what kind of videos were you actually making initially before Ad Outreach? What kind of videos were you putting through?
Yeah, so on AppFind, it was, and I may have failed to mention that. Yeah, so on AppFind, it's iPhone tech tutorials, teaching people how to use their iPhone, the best mobile apps, beginner's guides. There was also a really big open area for what I call complete beginner's guides. And the channel still exists. So I actually have an employee out in California. It's actually in the Silicon Valley area. really into tech, and he is producing multiple videos a week on the AppFind channel to this day, has about 500,000 subscribers. So that business still, I automated, set it in the background, and it runs and still helps a lot of people. But those early videos, there was an opportunity where people wanted to learn how to use their iPhone, especially early on. And so I would make this iPhone 7 complete beginner's guide video, and it's an hour long, and it shows you how to turn on the phone, how to turn off the phone. It shows, you know, this is where the microphone is. This is where, and it shows everything because nobody else was doing that. And Apple had a, and I think later on they might have had added some videos, but at the time they just had a user manual. Who goes through that? And yeah. Then, you know, and then a couple people on YouTube had maybe 4 minute long videos. I did the hour long complete beginner's guide. That video, the iPhone 7 complete beginner's guide video, has over 8 million views. So, you know, and it's actually something I'm very proud of, teaching millions of people how to use their iPhone. And still, we get so many comments of people that they showed their parents this video and it helped them learn how to use their new phone and like all these different things. And so there was an opening and an opportunity for that. And that's what I really jumped on. And then also showing people the best apps, like here are the best apps for your phone and all of that.
It's interesting. Instead of creating a course and putting some sort of funnel together, you actually created a free video to increase your viewership and your subscribers. And then when you, and that was your list. And then you basically, when you transitioned, you can now market to those folks. All right. So before we get, this is really fascinating, but before we get and dive deep into your expertise with your YouTube ads company, right, and the broader world of marketing per se, I must say that you are an exceptional and very charismatic entrepreneur. I'd love to tap into your entrepreneurial insights and share some valuable advice with our Seven Hatters. Is that cool with you?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Let's dive deep right off the bat. If you had to boil down, let's say, your entrepreneurial mindset to just two or three words, what would they be?
Win or learning lesson. So that's the short answer. That's the few words. And the explanation for that is everything that you do, every action you take, every test you do, whether it be marketing or business or a new offer or whatever, there's only two outcomes. It's either a win and a success, and it's something you can build on and repeat and do more of, or it's a learning lesson, right? And those learning lessons, those are mistakes. Those could be categorized as failures. They might be even bigger mistakes, right? But those things are the building blocks on which you grow and you learn. And so if you start thinking this way in an entrepreneur's mindset as a win or a learning lesson, then you have an opportunity to actually set yourself in an always win mindset. Because anything that you do, you have a positive outcome. Yes, it's possible that short term you have a negative outcome where there's a loss, might be monetary loss. It might even be categorized as a failure. And all of us as entrepreneurs have had those at one time or another, and we'll have those in the future. But those losses, no matter how much they may hurt in the short term, and sometimes they're a little bit longer than that, they are the learning lessons that we can build on to know what we should do in the future or what we shouldn't do. And so everything is either that win that you can double down on and do more of, or a learning lesson that you can learn from and do something with.
And see, I think that your success, and I will say this, I haven't met many successful folks, entrepreneurs or otherwise, where their success just happened by accident. Yes, luck is, there's somewhat of luck that's involved. There's no question about it. You got to be at the right place at the right time with the right product. I get that. But the mindset, that's why I asked you about mindset. Mindset is so important in entrepreneurship. And what I got from that little snippet is that you're one of the worst adversaries that you can possibly ask for. Because when someone punches you, you just get up and continue moving forward and just continue getting up every time you get punched down. And that phrase, and I know that because you said, I always win. Whether I lose and get the result that I get a result that I'm not looking for, or get the result that I am looking for, I'm a winner. Because on one hand, I'm learning how to not do that again and how to achieve. And when I win, I know that worked, and that's great. I guarantee you, though, the learning lessons always happen from the failures, not from the successes. And I think you would agree with me on that. let's talk about success then. I'm curious, how has your idea of success shifted from those early days when you started out at Outreach to where you are right now?
Yeah. Oh, that's a really good question. And I think that it goes back to also what you talked about with fulfillment, because I think early on, and you can't help it too, because you're in this area where you're building things up. And it's not that you're focused thinking about, oh, I'm focused on myself. But I think that just naturally early on in entrepreneurship, you're just doing so many things, you're doing different things. You're not really thinking as much about the bigger picture and the impact and what that looks like. You're more focused on, okay, I'm going to build this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And the excitement of having all of that. And I think early on, I always have loved like being able to help people. And from even the iPhone videos and the comments I talked about to the clients that I help with YouTube ads, right? And from the early app clients, but then of course, all the different businesses and coaches, consultants and experts and all the different businesses we've helped with YouTube ads. And so I love the kind of that direct, hey, this was great. And it changed my business or changed my life or whatever it is. But I was still focused on, okay, I'm growing the business, like measured all by that top line revenue and bottom line kind of profit, like all these different things. Versus I think now what I've really realized is that ultimately there's something greater than that. And also greater that really transcends, which is the, and I call it the ripple effect of impact, right? And so you have impact that you're creating. And so if I go and I help someone, let's just take one of our clients, Jared Ernie, right? So he helps small businesses with their Google review, Google My Business profile. And these are businesses that their Google review profile could make or break the business, right? And so he helps them with something really important. For local businesses. These are local businesses he helps. And we help him with his YouTube ads to get in front of those local businesses to say, hey, I can help you with this. And when Jared came to us, he was in a tough spot because this was back in 2020 and a lot of his clients really faced some serious challenges and pulled back on some of these types of things that they were doing. But he knew he could really help people. And so there was that direct impact that I had with Jared because we get him up on YouTube. In several weeks, he's now got all these new clients coming in and he's able to start paying off his debts and grow his business and start and actually turn it into a $1 million business. All of that with YouTube ads by reaching the right people, by reaching these small business owners. But it's not just that. It's the ripple effect of impact that he has on all those businesses. Because it's not just us helping Jared, right? It's by us helping him connect with his ideal clients. And now he's worked with hundreds of these small businesses that we've helped him reach through YouTube ads. We're having a ripple effect by us helping him. He's going out and helping all of these local businesses. Then think about those local businesses that this Google review profile, that might be the make or break difference in that business. And then think about all the employees that are in that business or the communities that they serve. And so you can really look at these ripples as positive ripple effects. And I do genuinely believe that when you're going out and you're doing more of that and you're creating a better impact and a ripple effect of impact, then it's going to come back around many fold in the impact that you create for other people, the fulfillment that you get from that as well, and also all of the benefit that those people are able to get. And then that will take care of your long-term business because that's the type of thing that really it's just different than just looking at the revenue or the dollars or those different things. It's looking at what is the real impact. And that is way more rocket fuel. I've got this rocket behind me here. Way more rocket fuel than just looking at dollars in a bank account to see the impact and the ripple effect it has on your clients.
They say that if you want to be successful, find a product or a service that can help someone achieve some sort of successful result, and then do it to as many people as you can get your hands in front of, right?
Yeah.
Or get in front of. Speaking of entrepreneurship, because I love that answer, so thank you for that. I think it's very impactful. But the entrepreneurial roller coaster is definitely real. Did you ever have one of those bottom low moments where you just seriously questioned everything, right? And if you did, how did you pull yourself out of it?
Yeah, and I did have one of those. And I've had smaller ones, but there was one that was definitely even bigger. And I think that because there's all the learning lessons that you have, but sometimes, and the opposite's also true. I've had periods of time where the wins just kept stacking, and then also times where the challenges kept stacking. And I remember at one point, we had seen tremendous growth and tremendous success on that side, and we had geared up for even more growth. And then we had some challenges happen in the sales kind of side of things and a couple areas. And again, I always take full responsibility for the overall company. And so there were just a couple of things that I could have done a little bit differently in the way that I led that team there. And then of course, then that trickled down right into that area. And so ultimately we faced some challenges on that side. And we had a little bit of a fundamental model issue at that time, because we were doing a lot of one-off packages where we were selling individual packages. People would then pay in full that month. And so if you have a sales, if you're doing that, you grow your expenses, but you then have to sell all these packages to exceed those expenses and build your profit. If you don't have a lot of recurring revenue, one thing that I learned, and this was probably one of the most expensive but also valuable learning lessons. That's the thing. It's like what you said, right? It's like you learn from these mistakes and losses. And when it's a bigger loss, it's a bigger lesson and it's a really valuable lesson. And so the thing that I learned there was that type of model works as long as it keeps growing in terms of what your sales volume numbers are, or at least stays the same. But if you have a down month, let's say you have challenges on your sales team, which, by the way, self-perpetuate because you start to have challenges there, then the sales team psychs themselves out, so they have more challenges. But even one lower month, right, what could happen is you could flip below where your expense line is, and then that runs into like more problems, because then you start losing money, even though you've built out all this infrastructure and you have all these clients. And because people are essentially prepaying for months and months, it just gets into this odd situation. And so this is something that we encountered, obviously, you know, a while ago now, but it was one of those things that it was like a wake-up call. Oh my goodness, there is something I didn't know. And I didn't know the value of, at that time, recurring revenue versus selling off individual kind of more consulting-based packages. And you wouldn't think, and this is like a higher level lesson, you wouldn't think that collecting all the money up front is actually a problem, but it can be. Now, it doesn't have to be, but it can be. Because if you're collecting all the money up front, but then you're raising your expenses that day, you still have to service all those people for those months going forward. And so you're not actually attributing that revenue the way it should be. It should actually be attributed on a basis for the time frame that you're working with that client. And so there were these different lessons that were involved there. But essentially, we were in that spot where we had some challenges on the sales team. We didn't really have as much recurring revenue and we ran into issues. And I just remember being like, what is going on here? This is because the thing is, those kind of challenges can compound, right? Especially if you have people on performance, you have people on this and that. And essentially, we had this small season where we faced some of those challenges there. And I think that was a time that really made me not question that I've always been steadfast in what I'm building and what I'm looking to do, but I really had to look and say, I think some things that I thought I knew, I didn't really know. And you need to have that humility to know that even if you really think you know something, like, okay, this is the model that works really well for us and we've been consulted on and worked with other people and works with a lot of our clients, like maybe there's a way to evolve a little bit to make it better. And I think that's where really ran into some problems, but we had to let some people go on the sales side to fix some of those challenges and bring some new. And it was definitely a low point. I remember having to let go of a team member that had been there for a long time, and there was just some animosity being built up around that. And at the time, that there were a couple challenges, and so I think that, you know, I know early on when we got on, you know, you really want to dive in. The other thing that not a lot of people talk about, those types of things, but these are the types of challenges that you face. But when you face these challenges, you learn how to overcome them for the future and you learn big lessons. And one of the big lessons I learned from this, there were some on the personnel side and sales leadership and that side, but the bigger lesson overall was the value of recurring revenue and also the way that you do accounting, even if you do book upfront revenue, making sure that you balance that out across the length of that contract.
It's interesting. You mentioned something really important. I think I want to just highlight it. So I have a software company. It's a SaaS business. So we operate on recurring revenue. Mm-hmm. When we first began, we were steadfast in looking for annual recurring revenue and a payment upfront for the year. And what we've learned, and now we're monthly recurring revenue, with an annual contract. Mm-hmm. So monthly versus annual, one-time payment. The problem that I've seen is on an annual payment, you tend to not understand your churn. Mm-hmm. Because they pay one time, and then when they churn is when they don't renew at the end of the year. If it's monthly, they're going to want to try to get out of the monthly recurring revenue. So if there's a churn problem, you'll know about it. But I think more importantly than that is entrepreneurs, especially young entrepreneurs. I always say an entrepreneur, a young, first-time entrepreneur, very dangerous human being. The second most dangerous human being is an first-time entrepreneur with money. That's another dangerous instance. But imagine if you have cash at hand and you're not managing that cash effectively. You're right. As expenses grow, and they do as you continue to build up your client base, and if you spend the cash at the onset to grow your business unprofitably, which is how you grow quickly, there's going to come a time where you're not going to have enough cash to support that growth because you didn't plan for it. You didn't save for it. So that's one thing that I think folks should really think about. When they get a bunch of cash up front, make sure you understand where that every dollar is assigned to, because it's assigned somewhere. It should be assigned to some sort of expense or profit. So let's turn into YouTube for a second. It's fascinating how platforms like YouTube evolve, because I've seen it over the years. From your vantage point, because you probably YouTube better than most, how has YouTube changed as an ad platform? And how did ad outreach pivot with it over time?
Ooh, that's a great, I love that. That's a great question. Because there's been a few major changes, and I've really been through each of these, and the strategy has changed along the way. Early days with YouTube ads, when I first really was diving into that and doing that with different companies, originally mobile app companies, and then we started working with expert coaching and then SaaS companies, and then also e-commerce companies, like other businesses beyond apps. And so when we dove into that, the way that YouTube ads used to run was it was all manual bid, cost per view, and placement-based targeting and keyword-based targeting. So back then, there wasn't a big algorithm on the YouTube side. You were the algorithm, which by the way, I actually think that is one of the reasons I am so good at YouTube ads, is because early on there wasn't an algorithm. So I was the algorithm. So I understand what the algorithm's doing, if that makes sense. So I had to go in, and there was not lead optimized campaigns at that time. Now this is back, 8 years ago. So you would do cost per view bids where you're bidding for a 30 second view or a click on the ad. They can skip after 5 seconds, you're bidding for a 30 second view. By the way, it's evolved over time. This is back then. And so essentially you were bidding per view, and then, but it wasn't self-optimizing based on leads at that time. That's also, by the way, back then why everybody was doing Facebook ads, and they were wondering, why are you doing YouTube? And I remember telling people, well, YouTube's getting better results than Facebook. You just have to know how to do it. And then, people picked up on that over time. It's one of our popular ads. YouTube ads beat Facebook ads. But anyway, at that time, we were going in and targeting keywords that people were looking up, also specific videos or specific YouTube channels. So let's say you have a weight loss offer. You could go in and target anybody looking up the keyword or watching a video that has the tag, because at that time, also YouTube had more tags. Nowadays, tags are been phased out a little bit. It's more algorithm-based. But at the time, tags were really important. And there were these tags like weight loss or how to lose weight or whatever, or searches, or targeting a channel, right? Maybe there's a weight loss channel or a fitness-based channel. You could just target ads in front of that or specific videos. So at the time, it was more specifically media buying specific placements, and then optimizing based on what performed and what didn't perform. It was a manual process. I was the algorithm. And when we were training clients on this, we were training them to be the algorithm, right? And we were running this for them. So we were essentially going in and seeing, okay, the keyword weight loss on this offer is getting a cost per lead at $5, and the keyword fitness, because it's a little too broad, is getting $15. Well, let's cut the fitness one. And so it wasn't doing it by default. We were going in and doing it, because at that time it wasn't lead optimized. So then the next evolution happened a few years after that. I think this was maybe like 6 years ago. They switched over to, they launched lead ads on YouTube. They had this over on Google search, but they launched lead ads on YouTube. And that was this next evolution that was around for several years until a couple of years ago. And what that was basically YouTube was the algorithm. So it would go in and it optimized, but it was still these types of keyword-based targeting and placement-based targeting. It's just now YouTube would help optimize. But what I realized is our strategy, we were able to know how to do this a little bit better. Over time, YouTube has made major adjustments over the last 2 years. And with the new involvement of AI, YouTube has actually phased out the old type of placement and content targeting, at least with lead optimized ads. There are still some ways technically to run it, but in general, they've switched over to what are now called video action campaigns that are targeted with audience segments. So it's no longer the placement-based targeting. Now you're targeting based on audience segments. And what these segments are ways to go and describe who you're looking to reach. Now, Google has a lot of pre-built segments. And pre-built segments is a good way to get kind of baseline results. But we have a strategy called our alpha AI targeting strategy that gets better results than average. It's like seeking alpha, right? It's like seeking, in the stock market, I know you know, like, but basically it's seeking those higher level returns. And then leveraging and training Google's AI on who you're looking to reach. So you can build what are called custom audiences inside of Google Ads. And these audiences allow you to target people based on interests, based on the data that Google knows about them. So there's more kind of affinity audiences and interest-based audiences. But there's also, bringing back keywords, there are intent audiences. So you could target people based on searches that they've done on Google and YouTube. So it's the evolution of what we used to do before. It's just in a new spot in this audience segment, custom intent, right? So what have people searched on YouTube and on Google recently? You could target people based on that. You can even target people based on websites and URLs they've gone on in the past. You might wonder, well, how is that even possible? Google owns Google Analytics, installed on half of all websites. And so they're tracking everything. And so you have a really good way to actually target people based on sites that they're going on. And so you could build these audience segments and now target people based on who those people are. And that's actually one thing that I did is I not just with Ad Outreach, where we go and train and consult and work with businesses to grow on YouTube, and we have some select clients that will run their ads, but in general, we mostly now are consulting and helping businesses implement YouTube ads. But what I've also done is I built a software called KeywordSearch.com. And what that software does is it uses AI to actually target your ideal clients on YouTube just by describing your business, clicking generate, and it can actually build out all of those audiences for you. And so we've now seen that not only is AI involved on that side, but you can also use AI tools to find what are people searching for on YouTube, what are they searching for on Google, what sites are they going on, and then sync those audiences to Google to target the right people.
So interesting. I'm mesmerized here. Three really quick questions about all of that, more on the tactical side. So is the way you find your audience, does it differ from traditional AdWords and YouTube advertising, or is it the same formula in terms of finding the right folks to target?
Yeah, so it's going to be relatively similar, but there is a difference in that you want to find them based on, again, like I said, these audience segments. So who are they? What are they searching for on Google and YouTube? So that's going to be similar to Google, maybe search targeting, and then also potential websites that they're going on as well. And the way that you can do this is you want to find what are your ideal clients searching for on Google and on YouTube. Also, what websites may they be going on, and what are the different ways that you can describe that ideal client to Google to build a kind of interest or in-market audience. And when you do that, you can figure out, okay, what are the ways that we can go in and target these people? In the past, this used to be a manual process that would take hours and hours. And again, similar to how I cut my teeth on when I was the algorithm, right? And that now helps me know how to work Google and YouTube's algorithm better. It's the same thing here. Because we've done the manual process so many times, we know exactly what we would do to do all the research. The cool thing is with the advent of more in-depth AI and also the ability to build software tools, which I know with a software company as well, what we did is we took all of our strategies to find and target audiences, and we packaged them into a software and took this process that would take hours and hours. And we ran a study recently. The average time it takes to go from searching to a synced audience in Google Ads, it's actually a one-click sync that connects to Google. You just sync the audience right over, you need to copy and paste it, is 2.6 minutes. And so we've essentially used our own AI software to reduce what would take hours to minutes.
So I get that every company has Google Analytics, mm-hmm. but if I'm a fan of Sony, as an mm-hmm. example, And I, as an individual, visit the Sony website once a week just to see what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then I go on YouTube to search for cat videos. How does YouTube know that I, unless they cookie me somehow, have visited the Sony website to show me a Sony advertising?
So they're tracking all of that data. Google's tracking millions and millions of data points from every single platform. Now, it's not going to track every single person or every website, because there are some websites that don't have Google Analytics. But it's not just Google Analytics. If you're using Google Chrome, there's also things they're tracking as well. There's a reason all these things are free. Gmail, there's a reason that that's free too. So again, they're not like reading your emails, but they're tracking your data, right?
So basically, if I'm on Google Chrome and on Google and I search for Sony and I go to Sony and it sees like I'm all on Sony, then I go to YouTube, it will know based on my IP address and my Google account, my Chrome account, to show me a Sony ad.
Yeah, or even if you're a rival to Sony. Let's say you're at Panasonic and you want to show an ad that's specifically tailored to show why they should buy that instead of Sony. I'm just using this as an example, by the way.
Yeah.
Even though I had my Sony camcorder, so I got the place my heart for Sony, but I'm just using this example. But basically, what you could do is you could go in and target people going to those sites by building what's called a custom URL affinity, and you could target people going to the Sony site. So you don't even have to, this is not just retargeting. This is like installing a retargeting pixel on other people's sites. And people don't even realize you can do this. It's a URL affinity audience inside of a custom segment. You can target people who go to those sites and similar sites, and it is pretty powerful. And so, for instance, one thing that we do, we know a lot of our clients use, let's just say, ClickFunnels or GrooveFunnels or Go High Level or whatever it happens to be. And actually, a couple of those we've had as clients, both ClickFunnels and GrooveFunnels, as clients of ours. But basically, there's ways that you can go in and target people that are going and building that, because what I can do is I can target anybody going to app.clickfunnels.com, which is their login page for ClickFunnels. And if I target people who have been to that site, then I can reach people who are ClickFunnels users, not just people going to a ClickFunnels site somebody else has, but they're going to the login page of ClickFunnels, which means they likely have a ClickFunnels account, and they're likely an ideal client for us because they're running some type of online funnel marketing online, and YouTube ads is a great opportunity for them.
So it's from what I'm hearing, and be honest, is there a business that shouldn't participate in ads, or is this beneficial for any business?
It's beneficial for most businesses. I would say I would give it a second look. So under $100 of average order value, you really want to make sure all of your metrics line up. And also, for lower price softwares, you also want to make sure your LTV numbers, you know, what your tolerance for your CAC is and all of that. You really want to make sure under a certain point, really at any level, you want to know all your numbers, obviously. But basically, where I see potential challenges, businesses that drop shipping, I would not recommend it. But also just in general, drop shipping, they're razor thin margins. It's really hard to do, you know, unless you really know everything and it's your main. It's the same thing with the low ticket affiliate marketing. But basically, e-commerce, we have got e-commerce clients that do really well. And we've got e-commerce people that can do really well. That said, they have to know their numbers. Newer e-commerce businesses that have lower priced products, let's say $50 or less, you really have to know what your numbers are with any ad platform. That's not just YouTube, that's any ad platform, because again, you want to make sure there's enough margin built in. But when it comes to, on the flip side, businesses that work really well are ones where you have those bigger margins, higher ticket potential offers. We work with a lot of expert-based businesses, so coaches, consultants, course creators, those types of businesses, but also softwares where you really know, okay, we've got the business fundamentals here. We know what our LTV is. We know what we can pay to acquire. Either we have an annual contract, so we can at least know what that looks like. So you have all of these details. It just really, it's more on the economic side. But with most clients, you're going to see really good, or not clients, most businesses, I say, because we'll hop on calls with people, we'll turn them away if they're not a good fit. But with most businesses, they're going to be able to get really good results on YouTube as long as they have a proven offer that has metrics that make sense. And I'd say that the trigger point where you really want to make sure is if it's under $100, just making sure that you know all of your numbers and you know what that looks like on the back end.
Okay, so you use HubSpot.
Yes.
And I'm HubSpot, and I call you up, and I'm like, Alaric, I hate Salesforce.com. I can't stand them. I need to win over Salesforce. But my ideal customer is either a founder of a company or someone in sales. I don't want to target mothers looking for baby formula. I don't want to target any of those people. I literally need to target those folks that are in the market for a CRM. And I need to make sure that it's specifically Salesforce.com because I don't want to spend my money on anyone that's going anywhere else. These are Salesforce-related folks. Is that a good business for you?
Yeah. So yes, because what you can do is you can target anybody going to Salesforce.com or potentially a login page for Salesforce. And you could do that with a URL affinity audience. You could also target people who are searching for Salesforce or potentially Salesforce alternatives, right? Or other buying intent keywords, which the software can help identify as well. But basically people searching for anything related to Salesforce or CRMs on Google and YouTube. You could also target interest in market audiences for CRMs, or you could target it based on persona of which you could also do the same affinity, or where you could target salespeople or founder, entrepreneur, executive. You'd also layer that too. Then you could do high income bracket. So you could do top 10 or 20% of household income, which is really powerful. It's also based on the individual as opposed to on Facebook, it's more zip code. So you could target all of Austin, for instance. You're going to get a variety of people versus on Google, you're doing actual household income that's based on the individual, based on that person. And then you would create a YouTube ad. And the ad has three components. That's a hook that pulls people in. It educates, provides value inside of the ad, and then has a clear and concise call to action to get people to take action. Usually you want to have some kind of free initial thing. So that might be booking a call. So it might be a free consult, but it could also be a free training or a PDF or some way lead magnet to bring people in and warm them up to then be able to take action from there. And so essentially targeting the right person with the right ad, the right time, that's the formula.
So two things, is there a specific time parameter to a video that works, to an ad that works? Could it be, does it have to be 30 seconds? Can it be 5 minutes? What are the ad types? And do you help folks craft it? Because I've been in the business long enough to know that a lot of people are not creative and they have no idea what they're doing. And if you leave it up to their moral standards, it's going to be a disaster. So how involved do you get? And then how long is the video typically for those that work well?
Oh yeah, we've got copywriters on our team that will go in and write the scripts for our clients. So that's one thing that we have found is really valuable. Now we work with our clients. So we have our clients share their expertise. They know best their ideal clients, what their unique selling proposition is, what they're looking to get across. And then we know how to craft YouTube ads. We've literally written thousands of these at this point. And so what we can do is we can work with our clients to craft the perfect script. We've got multiple copywriters on our team, and that's all they do all day long is write YouTube ad scripts and also sometimes funnel copy and things like that. But basically, we want to make sure that you have the right ad. Now, to answer your other part of the question, how long is it? Typically, the sweet spot is going to be around 3 minutes-ish. Now, YouTube will tell you that they recommend the ad is under 3 minutes. They might say over 3 minutes, you might not get the best performance. That's not exactly true. We've got plenty of ads that are 4 or 5 minutes long that do well, as long as you're not rambling, as long as you're providing value. I don't really recommend a 30 or 60 second ad per se. I think that you really want to have it be in the 2 to 3 minute spot is ideal, but you could also have it up to 5 minutes long. And it follows the framework hook, educate, call to action. Hook usually 15 to 30 seconds. The educate is the part that may vary, because if you have a lot to teach someone or educate someone on, it might be a little bit longer. If not, then you can do a little bit less, or it might be a software demo or whatever happens to be. But basically in the middle, you'd provide value anywhere from a minute to 3 minutes long. Again, you don't want it to ramble, though. You do want to make sure that it's very punchy, it provides value. And then you have a call to action at the end, again, another 30, 45 seconds, telling people where to go for the next step, what they're going to get. I do recommend a free call to action, whether it's a free call or a consultation or demo, or it could be a training or a lead magnet or a webinar sign up or whatever happens to be.
All right. Very interesting. I got two questions. One entails a crystal ball. The other one entails a time machine.
Okay.
Let's go with the crystal ball first. What's in the horizon for YouTube advertising? What trends, what shifts do you see now that's on your radar to get ahead of?
Yeah, that's a great question. So YouTube's going more and more towards AI and artificial intelligence style ads. And I think that more and more the creative is very important. And then also making sure that you know the targeting is what's also going to give you an X factor if you know how to do it and will give you alpha results as long as you can train the AI effectively. But going around the AI is not going to be the best way to do it. What you want to do is you want to lean in and give the algorithm more data. You also need to make sure that you're giving the algorithm data in terms of conversions. So you want to make sure that you have offline conversion tracking, some type of third-party tool, or Google Analytics, GA4 integrated or custom build, so that you can actually feed data back to Google. So ultimately, where Google and YouTube is going is getting and collecting more and more data, and then making sure that you train the algorithm on who you're looking to reach, and you create a video that is designed to convert. I also think, and what YouTube and Google is doing is they're trying to really make things simple to push a button and run a baseline ad. And I actually think that's good on the overall. So what they're trying to do is make it really simple to set up your first ad. That said, if you're looking to get better results or scale more efficiently or get kind of those alpha results, that's where training the AI is going to remain really important, because the better data you can give it of who your ideal client is in the very beginning, and then also who's actually opting in and who's converting, the better it's going to be. And I think that's the key, is really looking at it as training AI. So here, actually, I'll give you a great analogy. So in the world of stock market trading, early days, everybody would just had to be a better trader than somebody else. Then what came along? All the AI, trading algorithms that try and see, which I guess is a version of AI, but anyways, early rudimentary version, that would go in and they would go and trade for you. And initially, all the companies that had that first, they'd have a massive advantage. But soon, everybody had these trading algorithms. So then it's a stalemate, right? It's all the robots trading against each other. So nobody really has that alpha return. It's all just a baseline. So what is one of the highest paid professions in the world of stock trading is actually these quants, right? That know how to train their algorithm to make it better than everyone else's. So it's not everybody has access to a very similar algorithm, but it's the training data you put in and the human element. And that's exactly what we're looking to do with ads. So how can you be that quant for your ads that can actually train the AI and who you're looking to reach? Because it's going to be easier for anybody to set up ads and target people using Google's AI and get a baseline level of results. What is going to be more challenging is making sure you have the right creative that really works very well, and then also that you're training the AI to get better results than the average.
I love it. All right, now it's the time machine. It's a bit of a fun one here. If you had a time machine and could drop a piece of advice to just starting out Alaric, what nugget of wisdom would you share?
Yeah, I think I talked a little bit about one of them, which was the value of recurring revenue. I think though, what I would share, so I think the value of recurring revenue and doing that sooner would have been very valuable. But I also think that the lessons that I've learned along the way are part of the journey that I've had. Right. So I think that's important. I think in terms of an overall lesson, I think the biggest thing I'd say is when my gut tells me that I know I need to do something, I shouldn't delay that and I should make the decision sooner. So I think that some of the challenges that I faced could have been mitigated by making a decision sooner. And that's actually why now I make these decisions sooner. So I think that there's tactical things like the recurring revenue or these different, or the learning lessons that I've learned. But I think that more it's getting back in tune with when you know you need to make a decision. And when you know, it's just sometimes you delay if it's really hard or if you second guess yourself, right? Which isn't you not knowing, but you're guessing yourself. Then when you ultimately make the decision, the other thing is de-risking the decision. Again, a decision is going to have two outcomes, either a win or a learning lesson. And if you do make a bad decision, then you'll make a better decision next time. So I think that the thing that actually slows you down or harms you the most is delaying a decision you need to make, because then you're delaying the outcome, the win or the learning lesson.
And you delay decisions usually because you're fearful of failure.
Exactly.
Don't be fearful of failure.
Exactly.
People.
That's another one.
So I love the conversation. I can speak with you for days, but I'd like to close out my interviews with the following question. Who did you have to stop being, and who did you need to become to manifest your current success?
I think I needed to stop. So I think that this answer is a little bit different than maybe I would have given 3 years ago, because, you know, we have, you know, had in that time, obviously a lot of ups, a lot of exciting things, but also some challenges too, as I mentioned earlier. And I think that what I needed to really become was almost this combination of the confidence that I have, the learning, like the going through it, the wins, all of that, and knowing what I can provide, what I can do, the leadership that I need to have, and also maintaining the humility, the always learning, the always curious, the willing to do whatever I need to do. I think that it's a combination of those two things, because at times I weaved in and out of both of those. There were times where I got very confident and maybe needed to actually gain a little bit of humility there. But on the other side, I've had times where I haven't been as confident and I've been like, oh, I'm learning and I'm doing these different things. I think you need to embody both. You need to be strong and convicted and see yourself as that leader, as that person that has that knowledge that can really help and impact people. And you never are at, if you start to think that you're at the peak, you're going to make that a self-fulfilling prophecy. And then what's, if you're at the peak, you're just going to go down. And so I think that always knowing there's more to learn, there's more to grow, and there's more learning lessons to be had, and just saying, hey, I, the journey is the reward, and that's what I'm in it for.
I love it. Alaric, tell the Seven Hatters what you're currently up to, where they can contact you, how can they utilize your services, and how involved do you also get with each client? Do you hand it off to a team, or do you actually personally also get involved with some of your work?
Yeah, so it definitely depends on the client and where they come in. We've got an amazing team. We've really grown. So we have about 35 team members now, and we've got our offices here in Austin, and we have also people spread out across the country and a few other places. And so I can't work with every single client. Like I've said, we've had thousands of clients, but I do work with our Ad Astra clients, which is a higher tier. It's a combination of helping clients implement the YouTube ads and working with that, but also having we have a mastermind component. So we have events here in Austin. So we've got clients, actually this Friday, we've got about 30 clients coming into town, which is going to be great. They're going to be here at our offices. We're diving hands-on with them. And all of those clients I work more closely with. And then same thing with the fractional media buyer side. We have an offer where we'll have our team run ads on behalf of our clients. And that's very select. So there's a wait list actually for that. But I'm sometimes a little bit more involved with that again. But I also have a team. I'm not running the ads. So I've got amazing people that do that on our team. In terms of our initial clients, I go in there's videos and there's portals, all that stuff. So people have interaction with me, even if it's more either in a group setting or it's more different videos or content that I've created. But yeah, it just depends. But I love really interacting and working with our higher level clients. And one of the things that's exciting is as people ramp up, maybe they start off with one thing and then they build up, and then I get to work with them at that point, which is always great. But the best way to be able to go in and actually, I want to give a gift before I even talk about how to schedule a call. So anybody who's, you know, listening, watching this, I've got a 19-page YouTube ad strategy PDF. I want to give it to you completely for free. Covers my entire $200 million YouTube ad strategy. There's no fluff. It breaks it down, talks about all the different hooks, the ways to target, how it works. I routinely update it. You can go to adoutreach.com/gift. That's adoutreach.com/gift. adoutreach.com/gift. And that's my gift to you, full 19-page YouTube ad strategy PDF. Now, after you download that, there's the opportunity to book a strategy call. You could also go to adoutreach.com/apply to book a YouTube ad strategy call. with our team where we'll understand your business and map out a YouTube ad strategy. That's also a complimentary call. And then we can talk about what our services would look like if that is a good fit. And then, of course, you can follow me on all the major platforms and on YouTube, Facebook, just Alaric Heck. And I'm constantly posting on there as well.
Again, I can vouch for you being everywhere, and you obviously know what you're doing because you're everywhere, and that's a good thing. Alaric, I'll post the gift on the show notes, that link, so they can take advantage. Thank you so much for your wisdom, your approach to how you run your business, how many people you help. Thank you for gracing us on the Seven Hats. I really appreciate you being here. I love the conversation.
Thank you so much. It's been an amazing conversation. I really appreciate you having me on. It's awesome.
Of course. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Alaric. Let's end today with a show segment that I refer to as What Can We Hang Our Hat On? And here is my takeaway. Today, we delve into the compelling world of YouTube marketing with Alaric Heck, a true pioneer in the digital landscape. As we close this chapter, let's reflect on a crucial takeaway from our conversation: the transformative power of embracing change and the continuous pursuit of learning. In a world that's evolving at breakneck speed with AI and other technological breakthroughs, especially in the realm of digital marketing, Alaric's journey serves as a beacon, illuminating the path of adaptability and innovation. His story isn't just about mastering YouTube marketing. It's a testament to the resilience and forward-thinking mindset required to thrive in today's digital age. The key takeaway here is simple yet profound. The only constant in life, and especially in technology, is change. Embracing this change, learning from each challenge, and viewing every setback as a stepping stone rather than a stumbling block can propel us to heights we've never imagined. Alaric's journey from a young, creative mind to a YouTube virtuoso underscores the importance of staying curious, being open to new ideas, and never ceasing to learn. As we navigate our own paths, whether in digital marketing, entrepreneurship, or personal development, let's remember the lessons from Alaric's story. Let's commit to being lifelong learners, embracing the ever-changing digital landscape with open arms and an open mind. The future belongs to those who prepare for it today. And by staying adaptable, continuously learning, and leveraging the tools at our disposal, we can not only anticipate the waves of change, but ride them to our success. So, my dear Seven Hatters, as we conclude today's journey, let's take inspiration from Alaric. Let's challenge ourselves to learn something new, to step out of our comfort zone, and to embrace the opportunities that change brings. The path to success is paved with lessons learned, adaptability, and the relentless pursuit of knowledge. Remember, in the vast ocean of the digital world, those who dare to dive deep are the ones who discover treasures untold. So until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and never forget that in the pursuit of your passions, the most significant path that you can take is the path of the student. I want to thank Alaric once again for joining me so that we can all benefit from his wisdom. And until next time, if you found this episode helpful, please hit that subscribe button and tell other entrepreneurs out there what value you receive from it so that we can attract even more high-quality people into our Seven Hats community. So for now, I will bid you farewell and success on your journey. And until next time, my name is Yuval Selick, and I tip my hat to you.